nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
I'm going to start off with an overview of the last year of the Burke Nanotechnology Center and the accomplishments in research and delivery and collaboration. My name is Tim Sands. I'm director of the Burke Center. Last year was a great year. The research activity grew dramatically, and I'll be talking about that. Despite the challenges from the recession and the growth issues, trying to fit into the building and finding out where we're running short and where we've got capacity. But it was a great year, and I think you'll get a sense for the impact that the research is now having and the transition that we're making from really getting the research up and going to moving it along, moving efforts up toward the front of the world in terms of some of the activities in the U.S. and others, and also moving things more and more toward commercialization and the activities that are going on along those lines. I'll also talk a little bit about the way that the Burke Center has impacted collaboration. That's something I focused on last year when we met. I'll have a few updates on that as well. A little bit about the history of the Burke Nanotechnology Center. I'm going to go through this rather quickly because I think many of you are fully aware of what we've been through the last few years. But for those of you who are new to the Burke Center, I'll give you a quick rundown. The concept came about in about 2000. It was something that was driven by ECE faculty who wanted new facilities, but Martin Jiske and others realized that if we broadened the scope to include nanotechnology fields beyond engineering, that we would be able to not only raise money, but gather interest and do something much bigger in scale. And so in 2001, the Burke Nanotechnology Center was established as a virtual center. The founding co-directors were Dick Schwartz and Jim Cooper, and they directed the center up through the point of occupancy about 2 years ago. And so what's happened over the last 2 years is that we've been up and running pretty much at full speed. In fall 2001, by then, just 1 year from the idea of the Burke Center, about $51 million had been raised, and much of that from private funds, from our donors. 2003, construction started. We had the dedication in 2005. The Cyphers Nanofabrication Laboratory, which is our 25,000-square-foot clean room, opened up in the middle of 2006. And by fall of 2006, we had completed the tool move-in, and this is about 200 tools that were moved in, more or less one or two at a time, just to make sure that the downtime was not disruptive to research. And now it's home to about 45 faculty, about 200 graduate students from 12 different disciplines. We have affiliated faculty, another 100 or so from another 20 or so disciplines, and 30 staff, including about 19 staff who support the facilities and who make things run smoothly. The BNC concept, again, this is something that anybody who's been around the BNC is fully aware of this, how it differs from a typical, maybe academic research setting. The research is centered around nanotechnology. There's no question about that. And also microtechnology or microscience, that scale as well. But the thing that's special about the Burke Center and the way that the community works is that almost everyone is engaged in a project that is somehow connected to some global challenge or opportunity. So there is some very basic work going on, but most of it is directed towards societal scale challenges. And these could be in healthcare, they could be in energy, information access, all of these enabled by nanoscale science and engineering, and the work that's done at the micro scale as well. The community encompasses this broad range of disciplines, and that's really critical to the success of the Burke Center in that we have biologists and mechanical engineers and electrical engineers and physicists and chemists all working in close proximity and on the same projects. We try to do that in the same space to the degree possible. There are, as I'll mention toward the end, we've been challenged a bit by having our computational researchers in another part of the campus just because of lack of space. And that problem, I think, will be solved over the next few months. But to the degree that we can get everybody in the same space, even in the same room, to the point of when we have to assign space for graduate students, we try to get multiple disciplines, multiple groups represented in one room. May not be the optimal way to do it from the operation of a single group, but from if you look at the big picture, this is where the new ideas come from. When you have graduate students sitting next to each other who work in different areas, pretty soon you see a paper coming out of that fact that they sat next to each other and started talking about their common interests and where they might overlap. The best in facilities and tools, that's by pooling our resources, we can have tools that one wouldn't normally have in an academic setting. And we've got a number of those. I won't go through those in detail, but you see a couple of them pictured here. Everything is shared, and that's a complex thing. It's not easy to have a research community where everything is shared, but that's a contract that the faculty sign when they come into the building, when they bring equipment in. It doesn't mean that everyone can turn the knobs on every piece of equipment. We certainly have instruments and tools where there is only one user or maybe two users, but they're in a collaborative environment, so what they're doing feeds the rest of the community. And we also have quite a few tools that are certainly wide open and have as many as 200 different users. Fluid, we don't have ownership of space, so the way that we do that is that when a faculty member brings a capability in, that capability goes into the lab that is designed for that purpose and may be shared by several other groups and is also open to the community. And that's something that's difficult to force, but it's worked out quite well. And a sustainable financial model, which is critical, we have that. Now, before I move on to the Burke Center, I just wanted to flash up something to give you a feeling for the environment that we're in. The difference between the Burke Nanotechnology Center and some other nano centers around the U.S. and the world is that we're embedded within Discovery Park. And this particular chart just shows one slice through that. It's a map of the interactions or the synergies between different centers in Discovery Park in the fiscal year 07-08 based on actual awards from external agencies. So this is only one slice. There are many other ways we could look at this and see other sorts of synergies. For example, the Burton Morgan Center for Entrepreneurship isn't up there, but in fact, we have a lot of engagement with them, and I'll show that later on. And that's just because we don't have a joint grant, but we have other ways of connecting with them. And the fact that the Burke Center is sitting in that environment means that if you have an application that connects to biology or to oncology, we're right next door to those centers. There's a new interaction going on. It isn't funded yet, but between the Burke Center, physics, and the Oncological Sciences and the Binley Bioscience Center as well in the area of physical sciences oncology, looking essentially at the physics of cancer. And those are the kind of things that you really need this kind of broad interdisciplinary environment such as we have in Discovery Park to tackle. A little bit about the facility. Again, those of you who've been around the Burke Center are fully aware of this and probably spend hours in it, or maybe some of you haven't even been to it yet. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to walk around. We can set up a tour. We do that routinely. But the facility itself is really a scientific instrument. It's designed to do work at the nanoscale. And I won't go through the bullet items here, but we have the best water, the best air, the best humidity control, temperature control. Everything is designed so that you can work on almost anything you want without being limited by the building. New capabilities in the last few months, and it's just a few of the highlights. We have the NanoNex imprinting, nanoimprint lithography tool coming in this month. The Wraith e-beam lithography system is up and running. We have a new e-beam evaporator that I understand is just came up a couple days ago. And we also have a new process support activity, which Amr Mahmoud runs, which allows people, maybe customers internally or externally at companies, to come in and have processes done, full fabrication processes that would be hard to, for example, train a student to get up and running in the time allowed. And this gives another option. You can still have the user come in and be trained and learn how to do everything themselves, but you can also have the option of going to Amr. We have several new residents. I wanted to highlight a few. These are residents in the facility. Dr. Monica Lang, who's here sitting right here in the front, our new managing director. We have Professor Alexandra Sasha Baltaseva back here in the back right. Mike Manfra, I saw Mike. Yep. And Junghyun Choi, is Junghyun here? I don't see him. But welcome these new faculty and our managing director when you get a chance. They arrived since April of last year. We've got quite a few awards and honors. I'm not going to read all these, but I'll mention Mark Lundstrom in the National Academy of Engineering. This has been a good year for external recognition. And the more that the research it becomes visible, will be reflected in more awards and honors for the Burke faculty. Internally, we've also gotten quite a bit of recognition for the faculty. Vlad Shalayev is the 2009 McCoy Award winner. I didn't know whether I could announce that until I saw the announcement come out on Friday. So congratulations, Vlad. And we've got three of our faculty, two resident and one affiliate, who are the new university faculty scholars for 2009. And a long list here, we could go on and on. I just picked a few. Best Paper and Student Awards. This is something that's becoming rather routine and very nice. Our students are doing extremely well with their conference presentations and awards and fellowships. And congratulations to all of them. In terms of publications, and we do, of course, one of the metrics we follow is the publications that are affiliated with the Burke Center. And this is by way of the faculty member or the student who writes the paper choosing to use the Burke Nanotechnology Center as an affiliation, just an indication that they value the community, the facilities, the staff, and felt that that was an important part of the particular research paper. You can see that we continue to increase with about 160 Burke and NCN affiliated faculty or publications in 2008. And 95 of those were published in the last 6 months of 2008, so that's still growing rapidly. One thing that I enjoy particularly is looking at how the Burke Center, the facility in particular, the fact that we have common space, influences the way that people work. And this is a chart for 2008. These are papers published in 2008. And what you see here is a dot for each group, each research group, and a line connecting them if there was a joint publication that year in an ISI Web of Science publication. And if someone could have been very productive publishing 10, 12 papers, but not with someone else in the facility, that's fine. You know, we're certainly not discouraging that, but they're not represented up here. This is just a representation of the interactions that actually occur in the center. And you can look at that sort of in a time variation. This is 2006 when we were more or less a virtual center, had roughly the same number of people, but we weren't in the same space. When this research was done, which would have been in about 2005. In 2007, you can see the network getting a little bit denser, and then in 2008, it's really getting dense. It's almost ridiculous to put it in this format at this point, but and we have to move some people around because the people move. They were originally plotted up there with the idea that that's where they would stay, but no, you see people's interactions changing and moving from one side to the other. So we enjoy looking at that. The other thing that it tells us is where we have strengths that aren't connected well, and that's something that it gives us some visual representation of where perhaps the university's hiring priority should be in the future. In terms of citations, a measure of external recognition, citations for Burke and NCN affiliated papers, we have that growing rapidly. It's not a surprise, but it is going to continue to grow rapidly because the work is becoming more and more visible. Just one little snippet of the 3,400 or so journal articles published in 2007 by Purdue authors. The two most cited authors were authored by BNC researchers led by Professor Shalayev, and you'll hear about his work in a moment. We do have an annual award for citations. This is given to the authors of the journal publication published in that year. In this case, it'll be 2006, with the most citations in the following two calendar years. And that paper was written by Dr. Xu and Professor Fisher. Professor Fisher can't be here today. He's on leave to the Air Force Dayton. But his paper with his student, Dr. Xu, on enhancement of thermal interface materials with carbon nanotube arrays was the most cited of the Burke and affiliated papers in 2006. I think 2007 is probably going to be, it's already, I think, could probably already announce it. I think One of Vlad Shalayev's group's papers will probably be that, not to eliminate all the suspense, but of about 70,000 optics papers published in the last 5 years, papers authored by Vlad and his collaborators have been ranked 1, 4, and 7 in citations out of 70,000. I list those here. Congratulations to Vlad and all of his collaborators. In terms of the research funding that the Birk Center and the faculty bring in, 2008 external awards by agency, the total is over $14 million. And it's kind of interesting. This isn't really the kind of data you want to necessarily remember, but you might study it, and I look at it, because it reflects some trends, I think, and some opportunities. You can see that most of the funding has come in through the Department of Defense, the various, probably every sector of the Department of Defense and NSF. And there's a substantial fraction from industry, but we also have DOE and NIH slices that, frankly, are probably smaller than they should be and will be growing. Matter of fact, I'm certain of that. All of those slices, DOE, NIH, and some of the other smaller ones will grow for the coming year. You can see that happening already. So it's a very productive group in terms of bringing in almost $14, $15 million in 2008. And if you divide that up by topic, just to get a sense, and this is hard to do because some of these paper or some of these grants are cross-topic, but first rough cut of that, you see that the computational nanotechnology, the nanophotonics, and the MEMS, and the bio-nano are the biggest chunks. And again, I can see some trends here that I know that we're going to have a substantial growth in the nanoelectronics slice down below and also in the energy slice this coming year. So I think there's a great potential for the total amount of dollars coming in, brought in by the faculty to increase substantially over the next year, despite the financial situation that we find ourselves in overall. In terms of research strengths, and these are really reflected on the previous view graph as well, because they do correlate pretty well with the awards brought in. They span in nanoelectronics, where we're one of the top groups in the world. Computational nanotechnology, we're leadership. Nanophotonics, one of the top groups in the world, if not the top. Energy conversion and MEMS are two areas that are growing rapidly. Nanometrology, a group that is coming together beautifully, and I think will move up dramatically and become even more prominent. We're going to hear some of Arvind Raman's work in a moment. And nanobiotechnology, which is a strength here at Purdue, especially since we're tied in with the Bentley Bioscience Center directly, and we have a new CTSI, NIH program with the other Indiana universities. I think that this is an area that will continue to grow, especially when we see connections between the, for example, nanoelectronics, nanophotonics, and biology and medicine. The four logos on the right represent four of our major centers. The top two, NCN and PRISM, I'll say a little bit more about. I'll give a quick update. The other two, MIND and Indiana CTSI, are not centered at Purdue, but we're major partners in them. MIND is the Midwest Institute for Nanoelectronics Discovery, and it's a NNI SRC, Semiconductor Research Corporation Center, that is centered at up at Notre Dame, and we're a major partner. It's the fourth NNI in the country, and looking for essentially the next switch, what will replace CMOS. The Indiana CTSI is the Center for Translational Science Institute, I think, acronyms. But as it says there, accelerating clinical and translational research, and we have a portion of our facilities, our shared facilities, that are becoming a CTSI core facility, which will allow us to bring in more users from around around Indiana and also from industry. A little bit about NCN. The Network for Computational Nanotechnology was one of the externally funded centers that came about it almost simultaneously with the beginning of the Birk Nanotechnology Center. It grew out of the computational strengths here at Purdue in electronics and nanoelectronics. And as you can see from these statistics, it's grown dramatically. The main feature, the visible part of NCN, is the NanoHub. And I think most of you here probably use the NanoHub. It's got 91,000 users in the past 12 months. You can see 387,000 simulation runs. And besides the simulations, you see tutorials, short courses, talks, seminars. Matter of fact, the The presentations today will all be up on a nano hub over the next few months. It is increasingly cited by researchers who use it, about 80 new papers in the last 12 months in the scientific literature that cite the nano hub and its tools and resources, and as well classes that are using courses that are up on a nano hub. A couple of kind of spin-offs or consequences of the nano hub. One is the model is so good that it's been created, it's been essentially digested into a portable version, which is Hub Zero, and that's been exported to a number of communities, scientific communities, one of which is featured here, the Thermal Hub, which also has a strong connection to the Burke Nanotechnology Center operates in a similar fashion to the Nano Hub, except for that it operates in a domain of thermal sciences and thermal engineering with a nano component, micro component as well. Of course, each community has a completely different way of dealing with, I shouldn't say completely different, but certain aspects that are different from the way that, for example, the Nano Hub runs. So this is an opportunity to expand the model of the hub and expand it in new directions to new communities. And then just a little plug and congratulations again to Mark Lundstrom, who is the director of the National Network for Computational Nanotechnology and who was recently elected to the National Academy of Engineering. This is an example of some NCN work, recent work in simulation tools, creating a general platform for quantum transport that goes across scales and from the atomistic, but also to the effective mass approximation. This is an effort that is now attracting external funding and is an example of something that is growing rapidly on the hub as a result of its location there. NCN has also funded some seed projects, photovoltaics at Berkeley, which is another hub site, cellular mechanics at Illinois, molecular machines at Northwestern, and thermoelectric nanotechnology at Purdue. So the hub is, even the nano hub, is continuing to grow. It's not static. PRISM, another one of our big centers. This is the Center for the Prediction of Reliability, Integrity, and Survivability of Microsystems. I'm not a software expert, so I probably butcher the detailed description, but let's just say that from the PRISM, which has only been around for about a year, is now looking at basic MEMS-based switches and the surface contact surfaces involved and their performance and reliability, and is building sophisticated multi-scale models that go from atomistics all the way up to model the reliability of these switches. And among the software tools that are being developed are this immersed boundary treatment for solid deformation, some work on using or building tools that take into account the elasticity and the plasticity, which is very hard to model in crystals, and also looking at the metal-metal dielectric contact interfaces, which is a problem that has been studied for well over 100 years. And has not been, I would say, solved, but certainly the tools that are being developed are starting to get close to the actual level of complexity in real interfaces that undergo repeated contact. So PRISM is moving and I think creating a whole new frontier here for MEMS that ultimately will make it a more reliable technology. The PRISM group is also looking at the interactions between structures and fluids, for example, this cantilever modeling work that's going on. And I'll point out one thing here that in the upper right, you see experimental data being compared to models developed through PRISM. And the important part of this is that it's not just modeling, it's validation by experiment. We've got a large group of not only software folks and computational folks, but experimental people who are lead in that area who can build test samples to test the models and validate them. I wanted to take just a couple minutes going through some things that have been in the press lately, and I'm not going to go into detail. This is kind of a superficial trip through this, but just to give you a sense for where the public is catching on to what's going on in the Burke Center. This is some work going on and using nanostructures to detect glucose, very sensitive. These are tethered by a single-walled carbon nanotube. These palladium and gold cubes are grown by electrochemical methods, This project came out of some work that was being done in nanoelectronics and single-walled carbon nanotube transistors. It was more or less an accident, and then it was picked up and recognized by Marshall Porterfield and Tim Fisher that this is something that could actually have some applications in medicine. So it's a good example of when you take people working in one area, you put them next to people who work in another area, you know, a mistake is made. Some accident happens in the lab, and pretty soon they have something that's pretty spectacular with an application that was far from what was originally intended. Some work going on by Babak Ziyai, he'll be speaking later today, on flexible membranes. These are liquid metal interconnects and electrodes which allow stretchable electrodes so that one can measure deformation and do electrical stimulation of cells and all the way up to presumably wearable electronics. That development has received a lot of press. And a new holographic method used by the Steve Worley's group to direct, in this case, small fluorescent spheres around a surface just by pointing a laser, which is rather clever. And we also see some work going on in nanoelectronics, building by the vapor-liquid-solid method, nanowires. This is a collaboration between IBM Research, Yorktown Heights, and Purdue, looking at the details of how these nanowires form and whether they can be controlled sufficiently well to manufacture them with controllable properties. Work, again, out of Vlad Chaleyev's group in transformation optics, a whole new field that promises to revolutionize nanophotonics and optics. And we'll hear more about that, so I won't belabor it. And also nanonets, which Professor Alam will speak on in a moment, moving toward making flexible electronics a reality. And I think this is an area, and you'll hear some of the subtleties here, it's a fun area to look at. It's again, a multidisciplinary area, bringing techniques from physics of many years past and refining them to modern nanotechnological materials and devices. Some work going on in solid-state lighting, replacing sapphire substrates with silicon to lower the cost of LED lighting. Sticky nanotubes, we'll probably hear about that from Professor Rahman or something connected to that. But basically, what is the force that holds a nanotube or any nanomaterial to a surface? And that's a critical thing to understand in detail because nanostructures are dominated by surface forces. Work on through the Cooling Technologies Research Center that's headed by Professor Garamella, looking at cooling chips using both nano and micro technologies and novel physical phenomena. And work in simulation, looking at, this is out of Gerhard Klimek's group in the NCN, looking at how point defects can essentially enable, in principle, quantum computing. And some of the things that would be almost impossible to do by experiment and really have to be probed first by computational techniques. I wanted to mention quickly, I'm starting to run out of time here, I don't want to go over my time, but we have a Kirk Endowment Exploratory Research Recharge Grant program, and I encourage anybody who's interested to look this up on the web. It's a way of getting a small project started without having a funding immediately. So if you have a project that you want to get started in the Burke Center, you need a few $1,000s to access equipment, and then with the idea of writing a paper that will eventually lead to a grant or maybe directly writing a grant proposal, this is a good way to do it, and it's out there and it's available. So please check the web out if you think you're in that situation. International engagement, we've been very active in that. The Burke Center, led by Professor Tim Fisher and Dr. Pankaj Sharma, has developed a very strong relationship with three institutions in Bangalore, India. And we've had now two workshops, one in Bangalore, one at Purdue, and we have a third one coming up in Bangalore. This is funded by the National Science Foundation and the Indo-US Science and Technology Forum. Very successful so far in the sense that we actually have groups of teams forming from five or six areas that are doing research that is now being published and moving along toward substantial contributions. Taking advantage of some of the skills and talents they have in Bangalore at the JNC-ASR, the ICMS, and also GE Global Research. And so we're excited to see this collaboration kicking off and growing. We had the Indian contingent here just a few weeks ago, new interactions were started there. But you can see this large group It was fun to take 13 graduate students and 12 faculty to Bangalore, many of whom, like myself, had never been to India. It was definitely eye-opening and very enjoyable. We'll go back. Towards delivery, this is an area where our potential has not been fully realized, and it's an important aspect of the Burke Center. We have to be a little patient because these things take time, but it's been fun to watch this happen over the last few months and the last year. The invention disclosures coming out of the Burke Center are good. We're about 15 in 2008, but I think that can triple over the next year or two. We have a tenant for really a collaborator for our nanotech incubator. NanoV has already moved in, I believe, or at least they've started their lease. We're really happy to have them in the building. It's an experiment. This space is leased through the Purdue Research Foundation, and they have space there that they can use for proprietary purposes, but then can walk out the door and utilize the facilities of the Burke Center and the expertise. And I should mention that our students have done a fantastic job over the last year moving toward the formation of companies. They've been competing in business plan competitions. The last Burton Morgan business plan competition, the top three in the gold division were all tied into Burke, Microfluidic Innovations, Liquid Kinetics, and SciMetal. And SciMetal came in third here, but won the Oak Ridge National Lab Global Venture Challenge just a few days ago. And we're very proud of them. They got a check for $25,000. We'll see what they spend it on. But it's a good group, and they're competing now, I think, at MIT in Oregon and at Rice over the next few weeks. So we wish them well. It's a collaboration between Burke faculty or Burke students and students from Krannert. Carlos Kimini and Isaac Wildeson are shown here, and there are a couple of other team members that aren't pictured. We have about 30 companies we're working with in one form or another. These are either sponsors, partners, collaborators, or users of the facility. This list looks long, but in fact, we want to grow this substantially and to deepen these interactions. And Monica will be working with companies over the next year to build up these interactions. We're actually resetting all of our rates so that external users have a better shot at using the facilities. Looking forward to seeing this grow dramatically in 2009. An example of a partnership between government, industry, and university has worked in Professor Leary's group that is between Purdue, the Burke Center, Bentley Bioscience Center, and Basic Medical Sciences, and BME. And the company TechShot and also is funded by NASA, and it's an SBIR, looking at MIMS approaches toward solving some problems in analyzing the blood of astronauts. So it's an interesting combination. I just pick it out as one of probably 30 or 40 of these I could have picked to highlight those types of collaborations that involve industry, government, and the Burke Center. Last slide, changes and challenges. So what are we up against? It's been a really good year, but there are changes ahead. We have the Network for Computational Nanotechnology researchers moving to the Discovery Learning Center in the fall of 2009, and we're looking forward to that. That will bring them much, much closer to the experimentalists. We have the lab space outside the Cypher's Nanofabrication Lab is now effectively full, so we're in the process of decommissioning lightly used equipment to make room for new tools and capabilities. We've reached that point a little faster than I had planned on or hoped, and it creates all sorts of challenges. But it's a sign of growth and productivity. So now the hard work begins, at least for me, to figure out and the faculty to figure out what we can do without and to make room for some exciting new capabilities. Offices are full, but waiting lists are short. The initiation of the NanoBio clean room awaits an upgrade of air handling capabilities. We're certainly looking to take advantage of some of the stimulus opportunities to get that off the ground. And then in the Cypher's Nanofabrication Lab, we have the opportunity still to build some large programs, large partnerships with industry or national labs, and we're in the process of investigating what those possibilities might be. So, and then, of course, financial sustainability, we're in good shape, but that's always a challenge, a continuing challenge. So I'll leave it at that, and we'll hear now from five of our faculty who will tell you about the highlights in their own research and give you a feel for what's going on in the Burke Center overall. The first speaker is Vlad Chaleyev. He'll tell you about nanophotonics and nanoplasmonics.